Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And today we have another show dealing with metaphysics and spirituality. And if you would like to call in, you can use the numbers that are right on the website that you're listening from. And if you're in the U.S., of course, you can call one number, and in Canada, another. And we'd love to hear from you if you would like to do so. Call in, of course. I do want to mention that today we're going to talk about spiritual issues of governance. Yes, spiritual issues of governance. And I thought that that would be the appropriate thing for a show around the July 4th holidays, for those of you who are familiar with that in the U.S. Of course, outside of this country, some of you might be scratching your heads and saying, what is he talking about? Well, it's our Independence Day, and I think it's an appropriate subject to bring up. It's not quite Independence Day, at least not where I am, but depending upon where others may be, you never know. Yeah, and I'm speaking from what would be Pacific time, although I'm in Arizona. Okay, so what do we want to talk about? I thought, first of all, that I would read a book that I've heard talk about in the last week, written by a fellow named Glenn Beck. Interestingly, the book is named Common Sense. Now you might say, Common Sense. Well, isn't it a book I heard about from a long time ago? Yeah. It actually was a book that kind of spawned the American Revolution. In and of itself, it brought a lot of people to thinking that it was time to break our bonds of governance with England and the King of England, and to become a country ourselves, which is always interesting, would have a different kind of government. And so about 5 or 6 months before the U.S., or the colonies actually, declared themselves independent, a fellow named Thomas Paine wrote a book of the same name, Common Sense. I read that book a long time ago. I can't remember exactly when. I think I was in college. And, matter of fact, I'm almost certain I was. And the interesting thing about it was that when I first read it, I had a different perspective than I do today. And certainly I had a different perspective from a different vantage point. Because when I was in college, the Vietnam War was going on, and I thought that the United States shouldn't be doing some of the things it was doing, although I wasn't 100% a peacenik or something like that. But I was definitely against some of the issues that were involved with that war. Now, the interesting thing is that I really believed in the Constitution, and I believed in some of the ideas that were promoted by the original author, Thomas Paine. By the way, he never signed his name to the book itself. That's odd. He said, you know, he was the author, but he didn't let people know who he was, because at that time, writing a book like that while you're still part of the, you know, part of the British Empire could result in imprisonment and possibly who knows what, you know, because they didn't have the kind of laws that permitted people to express themselves without recrimination, because they didn't have true protection of freedom of speech, which is one of the things that he was obviously a proponent of, but much more than that. I think the important thing is that the thing that really struck me back when I first read Common Sense was that, like the Declaration of Independence, the idea of government was that it got its power from the people, but the people got their power from who they believed to be their creator, or God. And So it was based upon a spiritual principle that both the Declaration of Independence, which came months later, and this fellow's book, Common Sense, really started. So talking about spiritual issues of governance, I think that this is the appropriate place to start with. That ultimately, people in the United States that follow a religious viewpoint and have a historical, we'll say, reference to where their government came from, believe that it comes from their inalienable right to exist without being governed by anything or anyone else unless they choose to be, and that choice can be withdrawn under circumstances where a majority of those that are being governed choose it to so happen. This is something completely new, really, in terms of, we'll say, the world that took place in. I mean, this wasn't a commonly held idea. And there is a lot more that has to do with the question of metaphysics and spirituality and how the United States became, we'll say, eventually a country. It's important, I think, to look at it from this standpoint, that not only did people suggest or strongly believe, on an average, not everybody did, that God gave humans, people, the rights that they had, and not government, and people therefore control government if they choose to, and have rights over government. But there's a further issue, and it's really, really the basis, especially of Glenn Beck's book, of his version of common sense. And this is, I think, going to be the majority of what I'm going to be talking about tonight. And that is the rights of the individual versus the rights of the collective, we'll say, group or country. And it's a very, very, very difficult subject because both have some rights. In other words, the individual has certain inalienable rights, which are spelled out to some extent in the Declaration of Independence. But the Declaration of Independence also says that a people, they're not just talking, it isn't just discussing this in terms of individual. So you have both going on, and it's even more so true if we're looking into the Constitution. So you have these really, really significant differences in how a government may be created to, quote-unquote, serve the public. And the first thing I think, for me anyway, is the element for a person, an individual, to have the right for freedom of expression, freedom of creation, liberty, which I talked about in last week's and in prior shows, and the ability to create in ways that does not prevent others from doing so. This was, I think, one of the elements that was not exactly addressed in Glenn's book, which I think could have been. And so this is a real important point, that all freedom that we have, all liberty that we have, should exist provided it does not detract or destroy or limit the liberty of other people, regardless of whether there may be even citizens or not citizens or whether they live in our country or don't live in our country. You see, what I'm suggesting here is that there are limits on individuals, as there are limits on everything. And those limits need to be addressed within some kind of context. And the context I'm suggesting is that it is based upon, as long as what one individual is doing does not in some significant way detract from the freedoms and the rights of others, then that person should be allowed to continue to do whatever they seek to do without any kind of restriction put on them. And that's the interesting point that I think Glenn Beck was trying to get to, although he didn't address it exactly. So I would love to hear from many of you who might be reading his book, or might from this very show go out to do so, because I recommend it. I recommend the book. It has a great deal of very important points in it. The one I'm talking about, though, needs further addressing. So this is a critical element. That's the first thing. And then the second thing is that a government is there to supposedly protect the rights of others from individuals who may use their liberty to in some way attack or limit or destroy the property rights, the rights of expression, the rights of just living of others. So we have two sides to this interesting equation, and government has a purpose, therefore. It has a real real good purpose, and it's a necessary one. The greater problem that was existent back in the days when Thomas Paine wrote his version of common sense was that government in general was being used as a tool to do the opposite of what I just said. Instead of trying to protect the rights of people from would-be adversarial type of individuals or groups who wanted to remove the rights of others. Instead of doing that, government by the time, and in earlier times as well, but by the time that Thomas Paine was writing, the government that was controlling the colonies and in many other parts of the world as well, almost everywhere actually, was the opposite of what it should be. It had become a dark, even evil source that was trying to manipulate and control people for its own sake of growth, control, power, influence, etc. And if it was a king, like King George, then that person was also manifesting a lot of the pathological and negative ways of expressing governance. So this is a fascinating way to look at this, because this is really two parts of the mind of our creator. The creator really has three parts, but the first two parts have to do with the thought of the creator. And the first part of the thought is freedom, choices, will, that sort of stuff. And the second part of the creator is inclusiveness, love, givingness and planning and all kinds of, warm and fuzzy things. Government should be a protector of freedom while it tries to, at the same time, prevent others from losing their freedoms by wayward individuals and groups of people. And as long as it keeps that going and it does several other collective things that are for what people want it to have done on a collective basis, like build some roads or possibly have a mutual defense or possibly make certain types of, we'll call it protective issues for the group as a whole prevalent. Some people would say, well, what about, dealing with national disasters or terrible plagues or something like that. Yeah, those things people could choose to want to have government in some way involved. But the two sides of this creator's mind, and the third part is activity, by the way. It has to be put into some kind of action. But these parts of our creator which supposedly is giving us the right to create a government, etc., have to be balanced. And the balancing has been extremely difficult. Now, our founders, the people who created eventually our Constitution, decided to create a government that would be constantly weakened by its checks and balances and prevented from hopefully gaining enough power and control over people so that it was no longer just protecting the rights of people, but it was enforcing its own needs and desires because it was corrupt and because the people that ran it were corrupt, in other words, and it had fallen from its original purpose. And so this is the way they hoped to check this was to create checks and balances where one part of government would belabor another part, et cetera. Now, in the last 100 or so years, and this is in Glenn Beck's book, he has thought, and many other people think so as well, that the United States has become progressively, and that's an interesting word because they call themselves a progressive movement, progressively both liberal and moving in a direction where government would, for its own sake, control others because it knows better than individuals how those individuals should lead their life. And it's doing this in mass, which makes it a tyrannical system, because it isn't doing it to protect people, it's doing it to control people. If it were doing it to protect people, then it would be protecting people from other people. But what it does instead, in some circumstances, is it protects itself from people by controlling them and gaining more and more power. Because the people don't need any protection. They don't. They're being told they do, but they really don't. And the interesting thing about this is that governments that tend to do this as they become tyrannical, they do it in sly ways. They enact laws always for supposedly the security and protection of the people, but there's nobody to protect them from other than from the government, you see. And so you've got to be very careful when you start looking at this type of thing called progressivism, which is really an idea of government preventing people from becoming individuals and kind of molding them into automatons, into robotish type of citizens that have to follow many vast numbers of laws, regulations, rules, for the real benefit of only the people in power that we call the government. And this seems to be happening in general throughout the world, but it is happening more in the United States in recent times. And I have a great deal of concern that if the present administration is doing this at a faster pace and more than possibly any time in the history of the United States itself. And that's kind of frightening. And I think Glenn Beck wrote his book because of that. Now, does that mean that everything that the government does is wrong? No, it just means that if its basic foundation is not to protect people from those who would take their rights away from them, and instead becomes the main right remover from people and ruling people and controlling people and deciding for people what's best for them. I don't care if it's whether they should drink sodas or sugar or smoke cigarettes or whatever. Deciding these sorts of things really have to do with a desire to control, a need to control, and the seeking of power. Now, the more humans seek power, the more they are ignoring the first two parts of our Creator's mind, which is the thought of our own Creator. We call it spirit. They're not spiritual anymore. That means they're anti-spirit. And they're concerned really about activity and controlling activity and benefiting from activity and having material outcomes that they like, whatever those are. It could be money, it could be prestige, it could be influence, it could be a lot of things, but it isn't about spirit anymore. And since we're talking about spiritual issues of governance, then we need to really be looking at what this holds in terms of how we can make some changes so that this doesn't get worse than it might already be. Now, you could say, yeah, but didn't it all happen because the government wasn't regulating this and that and doing these things? Maybe we need all these regulations and stuff. Well, you know, it's kind of like this. The government, for years, has been corrupt. Maybe for almost the beginning of the country, there's been some corruption in our government, but it's been increasing to some extent. And the increasing in corruption has come about because the government, again, was trying to be self-serving. Most of the regulations in our capitalistic system that were ignored were done so the people in government could be reelected and gain more and more power and control over things. So they deliberately turned a blind eye to regulating. This is certainly true of the housing crisis, if anybody's familiar with how that took place. Because if you try to give houses away to people who can't afford them, eventually that system will collapse. And it's more involved than that, of course, I understand all that. But I think I'm trying to make a case here. And the case is that the government wasn't working in the interest of the people. It was deliberately ignoring rules and regulations that did exist for the sake of power and control. And now it's doing the reverse, initiating rules and regulations that are harmful to some extent, that prevent us from being free. And the cost of governance in terms of freedom is almost always evil. You should be aware of that. In other words, almost always, if the end product of a system of government is to remove significant freedoms in general from people who are not harming others through the exercise of those freedoms, they could harm themselves. I don't want to disagree with that concept, but they have a right to possibly do that, and probably do that. But they can't, they're not supposed to be harming others. But if that's the situation, then we have a real problem, because now we have a government that is moving in a very dark direction. And as I said, my opinion is, and of course you can disagree with this, I don't mind people disagreeing with anything I said, but in my opinion, we're moving more in that direction right now than at any time I'm familiar with in history. And that is frightening. That is frightening. Because it could lead to our system of, we'll say government, our system of society changing from a society of independent thinking people who are creative, the most creative of all time, if you collectively look at what the United States has created. And some of this is obviously rubbed off on parts of the rest of the world, so it isn't just the United States. But going from that, we could go into a tailspin in which we become like most tyrannical dictatorship-type countries, even though we might still be electing people, it doesn't change if they're tyrannical. We might become those countries that we have seen come and go and that inevitably will fail because they are non-creative. And because the people become downtrodden, and either they rebel in some type of violent way, which I certainly am not advocating, or they rebel in a way which is both self-destructive and destructive eventually to the society. I believe all governments that are tyrannical eventually will fail. It may take hundreds of years, like in the case of some Roman, early Roman times, or later, I should say, Roman times, or it may take just a matter of years for it to take place. And it's probably more likely the second, because in today's world, things move too rapidly. So, but that still doesn't change the fact that the country and the people, et cetera, can be destroyed in the process. And the United States is extremely important to the world because it is based upon spiritual factors originally. Now, that doesn't mean everybody has to buy into that and everybody has to be in some way spiritual or in any way religious. It just means that it was based upon those things. And this show is about that stuff. And that makes it unique because it's both spiritual and freedom-loving and has produced some of the greatest results from that combination, even in the assaults that has taken place in the last 100 years for sure, and sometime before that. I think almost right from the beginning there were some elements that were short-circuiting, but it has progressed, and it has moved with the progressive movement to try to prevent people from independently standing out and being great. And a lot of you say, well, whatever, did you write that book about souls and that souls of working group consciousness and work together? And hey, that I did write that book. But if you read the book, it says that souls are also individuals. And they appreciate individuality and freedom of individuality among themselves. And they promote it. They don't work just like all in lockstep together. Quite the opposite, because they recognize that that's the way the Creator chooses life to ultimately be. Even though much life on this world has not gone down that same path. Hopefully it will go down that path, but we have yet to see the fruition of this entire script that souls function within. So we're not living as souls in the physical world. Seldom do we. But it's certainly great that in the United States, there's a soul-like beginning to its choices in government. And I think this is very, very important. Again, you don't have to believe in any religious thing or anything to understand at least what I'm trying to say, even if you disagree with the spiritual thing. You could still say, well, I can still see that the freedom is a very important factor. Well, I want to talk much more about this when we come back. And I want to get into some of the, we'll say, more complex elements, but at the same time, talk about some of the simpler solutions. One of them I had proposed a number of months ago, and I think it's important to restate it, maybe adding a few extra things to it. And further, to look at how we might be able to still change the problems that I think are coming our way. And if we will stand up and say something about it and try to change it. Okay, so we're going to be back in a couple of minutes. And when I come back, I also want to tell you more about some other things that I'm involved in, give a minute or two spiel to that. So we will be back in about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
And what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower, MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is. I'm your host, Niles McFlower. It is a holiday, more or less, for some people. And our normal engineer, his name is Seth, is, of course, taking the day off. So the station manager is trying to fill in, and he had a call come in. On it. They got a couple of different shows going on at the same time. And so he got confused or couldn't get to the commercials on time or whatever happened. And so at any rate, sorry about that. I guess we had a couple of minutes there where you probably were saying, didn't he say we were going to commercial and now he's not there? I can't control these things. Unfortunately, I can only report to you what has happened. And we're going to go a little bit longer because of that, making up for the time that we missed there, which is great because I like to talk. You know that. So, and you still can call in if you want and all that stuff. It's all available. Now, speaking of commercials, this is sort of an ad hoc thing. I just want to mention to you, if you didn't hear it the last week, that we are selling a product that's made out of a substance called resveratrol. You might say, well, what the heck is resveratrol? Well, it's that stuff that, you know, you've heard about that comes out of, a lot of people think of from grapes. It actually, they get it from another plant. But it doesn't matter. It's the same stuff. And it may significantly improve people's life expectancy and do other great things. I've been trying it. Some other people I know have been trying it with really dramatic results. The thing that I want to mention, though, it's not so much about people. If you need it or want it for your own personal use, you can get it now from this other company that I'm working with. You can get it. But there's plenty of other companies that are selling it, but this stuff, the stuff I'm talking about, really, really works. I've tried some of those other ones. They either don't work or they make you sick, which I don't. When I say sick, you get some kind of minor side effects, which I don't care for. This stuff, there are no side effects. It seems to work great, and it's fantastic. And it's reasonably priced compared to some other things for what you're getting. But besides that, we also tried it on some of the pets, and this is really remarkable. They do as good or better than we do with it. And the thing that a lot of us have pets that we want to live a long life and be healthy, et cetera. This is the first product I've seen that dramatically improves for dogs and cats the life expectancy, the appearance, the way the animal responds. I mean, just everything about the animal. And the thing that really impresses me about that is that if it works on dogs and cats, it probably is going to work on people. Because dogs and cats, there's no placebo, there's nothing, you know, you can't feel, they don't know that what's going on. So they're not going to have a psychological change, so to speak. So if you're really interested in it, you can get, it's called Ideal Cell Sorption Resveratrol VF. Just call it Ideal Resveratrol. And you can get it from foreveryoungproducts.com, foreveryoungproducts.com. And if you want to call and talk to somebody about it, 800-777-7850, you can call that number as well. But the thing about it is that it doesn't cost very much. Not if you have smaller animals like cats or smaller dogs. I mean, it's like 50 cents a day or 30 cents. It depends upon the weight of the animal. It isn't a lot of money, but the results are remarkable. That's all I can say. And you will see them within probably 2 months. So, I mean, after you use this thing, you'll start saying, well, my cat's starting to act like a little kitten again. Or, I mean, just things that you would know if you've had the animal for any length of time, you'd be able to see the changes, including gray hair and stuff like that. It just goes away. That's pretty remarkable. So I wanted to mention that. Now I'm going to go back to what we're really talking about today, which is spiritual issues of governance. And this is, to me, a really important show for this time of year, for what we're doing today. And I want to go a little bit deeper into the idea that without freedom and liberty, any government, regardless of how benign it seems, but how it seeks to make everybody, you know, happy and, you know, give them things, but if it does so at the cost of freedom and liberty, it's a dark government, and it's ultimately going to become tyrannical regardless of whatever else is doing. And so this is something to be quite concerned about. And I realize many people, you know, say, well, yeah, but we pay a lot of taxes. Shouldn't we get something? And, well, you know, that's the kind of like the sucker approach. Yeah, I'll give you something because you pay taxes, but you're going to lose freedom and liberty. Well, that's definitely not a very good exchange. And, again, read Glenn Beck's book about this. I think it's quite good about that part of it, you know. And it's called Common Sense, like the original version. And Thomas Paine's original book is incorporated at the end of Glenn's book. I mean, you can read the original version from 1776. I mean, that's pretty amazing. You can get two books for the price of one, and they're very inexpensive. The guy's selling books so cheap, I don't know if he's making any money on them, actually. But that's really, really great. I think he is, because he sold an awful lot of them. I went to a few stores, and they're sold out. I mean, big stores. Stores that usually have zillions of copies of the books they carry, sold out. So he must be doing something right, as far as this book is concerned. All right. And no, he's not a sponsor. He doesn't even know what I'm talking about, and I'm sure of that. All right, so what else can we do? What else can we do to change around a circumstance where a government is not responsive? And you can feel when it's not responsive. That's why it's called common sense. Our senses tell us that we're not as free as we used to be. Our senses tell us that we are in a circumstance where the government, instead of making a better place for ourselves, our children, and our children's children, is doing some things that are not good for all of us. And it's not good for anybody. What can we do in that kind of situation? Well, one thing I propose, now this is more long term. It would take years, and it would take some doing to change. But I suggested in a simple solution that we today have the technological capability of actually creating a functional pure democracy, or almost pure democracy, without the need of a republic. Now, for some of you, you may not know the difference. A democracy is where it's like one person votes, and the combined total of all the citizens that are voting determines the outcome of any particular issue. That's a pure democracy. Those have in the past been almost impossible to have once you get over like 1,000 people or something, because you got to get all the people together for every decision that's made, and it just doesn't work. But today we have the internet, and we have means and ways of securing that if a person chose to vote over the internet about a lot of different issues, they could do so. Now, what I'm suggesting is a democracy with a modification to it, that it becomes instantly a republic whenever there isn't a quorum. A quorum could be 50% or 50% plus one person actually voting on any issue. And when that happens, then all the people that we normally elect as they are elected today, instead of being advisors to us who t- tell us their opinions, but they can't, they don't have any voting rights, become real voters and vote as in a republic when there is no quorum. So if we get lazy and we say, I don't want to deal with that, let the other guys, the people we elected, deal with it, then they become just like they are today. But if it's important enough to us, or if we don't like the way they seem to be voting about things, we just get on the internet and we all vote. And as long as there's a quorum, it's at least 50% of the population doing it, we can make a change and we can immediately affect things. Now, that's pretty interesting. And there's safeguards we can introduce that are available right now. First of all, we can have a voter registration card, which goes into a little machine. We can carry that. Obviously, those are available already in some states. And that's the first protection. But a greater protection is face recognition, voice recognition, because you can, right now you can get a camera and it can do all these things, and fingerprint ID, and even the eye printing ID. So there's all those. If you combine them together on a computer, you would have pretty good assurance that the person who is choosing to vote at their computer is the person who is entitled to vote at their computer. You see. Now, is it possible that maybe someone could get around that? Yeah, but not on a mass scale. Never on a mass scale. It wouldn't be possible. First of all, it would get out. People would talk about it and people would know. So you can't have elections stolen. As a matter of fact, that system that I just described, with using all five of those methods, would probably be much more secure than any other voting system we presently have because of the chances of corruption with machines and other things. And people, you know, the human element of making mistakes about identifying people. So it's possible, and even probable, that we would have a much cleaner, less corrupted type of environment of electing and also of voting on various issues. So that's one possibility. Again, that would require some changes in our Constitution and some, obviously, this is not something that's going to happen overnight, but it is something to maybe seriously consider as the coming future kind of way that we could gain control, better control over our government. Now, what about before we get there? Well, before we get there, my suggestion is that people, and this is out of Glenn Beck's book, I'm sort of quoting him, but I'm adding a little spin to it, that people consider the following, that you not vote for parties, because the parties really are not serving people in general. They're serving themselves. But you vote for individuals, and you look for the individuals who you can determine through your common sense is not lying to you, and who is interested in freedom while they're trying to carry on the basic business of what we want as a majority of people or more out of our government. And if we start looking at the individuals, we might start electing people who are from odd parties, like Glenn mentioned both the Constitution Party and the Libertarian Party were running against a longtime senator from Pennsylvania. You probably all know who I'm talking about. And that senator was running Republican, but then switched to being a Democrat recently. And so everybody's getting screwed on the deal, so to speak. And the weird thing about it is that these other two candidates were probably much better because they were more honest and more open to where they were coming from. And one of the issues is that candidates lie to us all the time. So I think that if we can't get the truth out of a candidate, then they should not be part of government. And another thing that I really like is term limits. I think it's time that people just be able to serve literally one or two terms, and that's it. They're done. Can't run again. And I would make term limits for everybody. It wouldn't make any difference what they're doing in the government. I don't think we should have people in the government that are doing anything for very long. And even that means the bureaucrats. People who aren't necessarily elected but are hired. Now, that puts a lot of strain on things because people learn a job and they, you know, make it good at it. But I even believe that the bureaucrats should have limits on their job. If you want to work for the government, you can, but maybe you got a maximum 7 years and that's it. Then you're going to find a job someplace else. It limits the government size. It reduces the propensity for a machine-like system being developed under an administration to control the way the whole government's working. And I think that's one of our greatest dangers that's taking place right now as I speak. So there's a concern that we could obviously get rid of if we just have people with limits and we limit even the people who are working that are just the bureaucrats doing stuff. So that would help considerably because, I mean, no matter how selfish somebody is, they can only be there for a limited period of time and they're gone. And it would tend to not attract people who are power hungry in the first place. Because one thing about people who are power hungry and seek to control others is they don't like giving it up. And if they know they're going to have to give it up in a relatively short time, they won't be attracted to the job in the first place. You see what I'm getting at? So that's an even more important safeguard than maybe the other things I mentioned. And I would like to see that really enacted as soon as possible. But I think it is important for us to start considering alternative people and candidates, people who are not as interested in a career and in controlling, but in true public service, and who have a respect for the individual rights of people as well as wanting to do good for the people as a collective. We need to have people who have a balance in that, who aren't seeking to have a government that controls almost everybody and everything. Even if they don't want the power, if they want that, that's a thing we should probably seriously consider voting against. Now, does that mean that I'm telling everybody that for those of you who believe that that's what you want, you shouldn't vote for that or want that? No. If that's what you want, go for it. I mean, there's some people out there that say, I'm a socialist. Vote for me. I want to do this or that. As long as they're being truthful and you want that, that's great. If you really want to have a system in which there is little freedom, little creativity, and the government tells you exactly how to live, et cetera, then go for it. I would also hope you might consider leaving and going to a different country. but still, that's your right. That's your right to say that that's what you want. And to see if you can get a lot of people interested in that, I would hope, again, that that won't be the case. Because then I might have to leave. And a lot of people I know might have to leave if it continues in that way. And that would be a terrible thing. So hopefully this is making some sense, common sense, to those of you who are listening. I hope what it isn't doing is creating a situation in which I'm suggesting polarization. I'm suggesting the exact opposite. I think polarization is the way that this whole system has evolved. It's fake polarization. Most people don't mind others having differences of opinion, provided they keep most of the liberties that they believe they should have, and they only give up any liberties that actually do have adverse effects on others' liberty. But other than that, I think most people are very reasonable about that. They don't mind being in a system where there's a difference in opinion. Right now, we have just the opposite. Because people are having their liberties taken away from them, at least they think they do, think they are, and in many cases they actually are, this is creating all kinds of frenetic and even hostile actions because people become more angry and actually very upset, even if they don't understand what I'm saying. On a conscious level, they get emotionally very, very riled up as their freedom and liberty is removed from them. That it's just a natural state because it was given to us spiritually as part of our Creator's mind and thought. And it's in our nature to become angry, agitated, hostile, we'll say bitter, and maybe violent if they are removed from us because it's the same as removing God from us. That's the thing that I'm getting into this a little bit late in the show, but I talked about it earlier. This is a critical element to what it means to have spiritual governance, is that we have to feel our Creator in us. Even, and I believe this is true, even people who don't believe there's a Creator. Of course, I could be wrong about that, obviously, and I'm not putting that trip onto them. But I'm saying that I believe it to be true for everybody. That this is a natural state. This is a natural state for human beings to seek to be free, to seek to have the ability to be creative, and to be creative in a way that they consider to be similar to their own Creator. And there's a lot of agreement on those ways, but not a permanent type of thing. It's somewhat relative, and it also is more virtue than it is a rule or some method that is proposed by a religion. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about in our deepest parts of ourselves, we know right from wrong and good from not good. And we know evil, too. Some people refuse that it exists, but when they're faced with it, they know it. When they're faced with it. So it's important, I guess, to recognize that the foundation of the issue of common sense, the sense actually comes from our sense of our own Creator in ourselves and in others. And as it is torn away from us, we are able to recognize it and do something about it. If you understand what I'm saying right now, I strongly suggest you get Glenn's book, because you're going to read that book and you say, yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's it. I couldn't say it better, because this is where the guy's right. But remember, he doesn't cover all the things I covered in tonight's show. It's a limited kind of expose, you might say, of the problems. But it still is very, very good. All right, now, if we're going to increase spiritual development, government is not the way to do it. Government is only there to prevent others from taking it from us. But the way we develop it in ourselves is to be co-creative, which means free. It means able to express unique individuality as a soul here, living here, and in ways that may be counter to some others, but doesn't destroy their ability to do the same. We are truly acting as souls when we help others to be free, while we exercise freedom, which may be somewhat different or completely different from the way they're expressing it. That is the real spiritual issue. That is the real way to co-create, to be part of a system that can protect and do all the things we want government to do without government becoming tyrannical. If we express that in our lives and then enforce it in the way we vote and the way we express ourselves to others so that they understand that they can vote the same way, they can do the same things, that is the greatest protection we have right now from tyranny and from a government which appears to be moving very much out of control in ways that could be very, very destructive, not just for our country, but for many others, because the United States, when I say our, those people who live in the United States, I realize some of you do not live here, but we stand as a beacon of this concept because we became a nation based upon it. And until that time when we did, no nation before us had ever done so. That's an amazing thing that I'm saying. We are the first, and right now we're the most, even though we aren't threatened by problems. And so we have to realize that we're doing this for the world, but also for all the individuals in the world. We're not trying to gain world power. We're not trying to force it down the throats of other people. We're trying to do it by example, so that others can say, that's how you do it. Now I got it. I can follow the United States' way of doing it, or maybe I can change it or modify it in some way to make it our country. But still, it gives them a beacon. It gives them a chance to make a difference. Well, we are definitely running out of time. I do want to mention again, I'm going to give that name, foreveryoungproducts.com. If you want to, foreveryoungproducts, I know it's a long word, .com, if you're interested in that stuff I told you about earlier. And I hope this show has really struck a chord. It has really struck a chord. It made a difference. And I'm going to just sign off right now. I had some other things I can talk about, but I'm not going to do that because we've used up our time. So until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.